I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. We're talking books today. What are you reading? What books have made the strongest impression on you this year? What books are you thinking of giving and hoping to get in this holiday season? Heidi Daniel is the CEO of the Enoch Pratt Library. Paula Willey is the children's librarian at the Southeast Anchor Branch of the Pratt in Highlandtown. They join me with their picks for readers young and not so young. Fiction, romance, biography, history, graphic novels, comics, the back of cereal boxes, whatever you're reading. We'd like to hear about it and share it with folks who are looking for things to stuff in their stockings and add to their pile of prose. Midday gets underway right after these headlines. And good afternoon. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome. We're going to talk books today. Heidi Daniel is here. She is the CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library here in Baltimore. And if you're looking for suggestions about what books to give and what to be given in this holiday season, she is the perfect person to ask. How you doing, Heidi? Good to see you.
Well, good to see you too, Tom.
Happy holidays. And listeners, we would like to hear from you. What have you been reading lately? What have you been really, really excited about in terms of what you've read this year? Let's share your suggestions for great books with the Midday community. Our number here, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday. WIPR, and we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. A little later, we'll be joined by Paula Willey. She's a children's librarian. We'll talk about books for the little ones, but for now, we'll talk about some adult books, maybe some YA books. Are you reading fiction? Are you reading biography? Are you reading self-help? What are you reading? Let us know. 410-662-8780. So Heidi, first of all, before we start talking about some titles, how are things going down there on Cathedral Street? What's the status of the renovation of the Pratt?
So things are going really well on Cathedral Street. We're moving towards completion of the project. And every time we move into a new phase, it just gets more beautiful. We are currently working on sort of the BSTEM, the Business Science, Technology, Engineering, Math wing, as well as the Humanities wing, and Central Hall. And Central Hall, of course, is going to be our sort of showpiece when you come in the building, and it is looking amazing. They're restoring, you know, the ceiling and all of the details around the edges. And then what was our Sights and Sounds, which is going to be our new Best and Next section when we reopen, has so much detail on the ceiling, and they're restoring all of that. They got rid of the big sort of egg crate lighting that was sort of obscuring your view of that ceiling, and new historical lighting fixtures are going in. We are moving towards completion and planning our grand reopening celebration for fall of 2019.
The fall.
The fall.
So we still got another year and whatever.
Well,
a little
than
bit,
a
little,
year.
Little under
I'm like,
a year.
It's less than a year.
Yeah, right.
I'm
Please,
anxious.
God, make it less than a year.
Please make it less than a year. We do expect that construction would be, you know, sort of significantly complete closer to summer, but we have a lot of pieces that we need to move back into the building. So a lot of our collections that we had to move off site will move back in. Furniture being restored, staff moving back in, including my offices over the next year. So we will be substantially completed and ready to celebrate in the fall of 2019.
Is there a library somewhere or a set of libraries across the country that you used as the paradigm, as the example to renovate the Pratt? I mean, this is obviously being done as an historic renovation. I mean, this is a historic building. I forget when the building dates from. You probably know.
So it's in the early 1930s is when it completed. So talk of the new library began around 1928, and then it was completed, I think, 1932, 1933. So there was not a grand opening celebration at that time because we had just began the Great Depression, so they determined that it wasn't appropriate to have a grand opening celebration. But the building for its time was really unique. For the historical renovation, I'm not sure it began before I got here. It predates me, but there are several libraries across the country who have done really grand historical renovations. St. Louis is the first one that really comes to mind for me. They did a beautiful job of restoring their historic central library. Library. But the Pratt's Library, its central library, was really unique at the time that it was built because you see features that you didn't see at the time in any other central library. For example, the street-level entrance was considered very revolutionary at the time. Traditionally, you sort of ascended to knowledge with the sort of Carnegie libraries with their grand staircases up. And Joseph Wheeler, who was the director of the Pratt at the time, wanted it to be accessible to every person in Baltimore. So
that's
housewives with strollers, and same with the department store.
So you come right
windows.
Off the street, and there you are in the grand hall.
Right, exactly. Right. And for that time, that was really, you know, unusual. Same with the department store windows, which were to display and entice people into the building with the collection through a sort of store merchandising model. And that, again, very unusual for the time. And then a lot of the stacks, you know, there's three floors of stacks below the building that sort of help support it foundationally. But a lot of those books, the reference books, were moved up so that people could browse them. And at the time, libraries did not like people touching their books, you know, unlike now where we're like, please touch them, take them. At the time, they were sort of kept away from the general public. And so to bring them out and have them accessible to the general public was also very unusual. So a lot of unusual things about the Pratt when it was built. And a lot of the things that we're doing now both take it back to that historical feeling and look, but we're adding so many modern amenities with the audio video recording booth and the maker spaces, the two business and career labs, a technology lab and a parent room in the children's area. So it's a nice blend of modern services to move us forward and that traditional beauty of the building.
So there's a parent room? Is that a place where the kids can dump their parents while
they
go to the library?
Yeah, exactly. So that's where they ditch you. no. It's a parent viewing
room. It's got a wet
room.
Bar and a jacuzzi
right, exactly.
in there.
Right? We would probably be very popular if that was the case. I know I would frequent that space as a parent. But, you know, the room is really meant for viewing of like activities that are happening in the children's room, but it's a flexible space. So we can also use that room for other types of programs.
What is Best and Next?
Ooh, so Best and Next is going to still house our audio video collection that was there traditionally, but it's also a curated collection by our competent and intelligent staff on whatever the newest topic is of the day. And so it'll be really flexible. So it might be a curated collection and display on immigration or voting rights, or it'll have the New York Times bestsellers. So whatever people are talking about will be there and be present and help you find those resources.
Yeah.
It'll also have a little bit different seating model, so a little less formal, and a great place to come and work and get some inspiration.
Well, it'll be really exciting when it's finished. I mean, across the street from you is the Baltimore Basilica,
right,
which is the first Catholic basilica in the United States of America. And they restored it to its original splendor. I mean, it was an 19th century building, as I recall. And, you know, it had gone through all sorts of renovations, you know, and they ripped all that stuff
right.
out and restored it to its original architectural grandeur. So it'll be great. I mean, is the point or the hope with the Pratt to restore it to the way it looked in 1930?
Well,
or 32,
as much
whenever
as we
it opened?
Can, mm-hmm. and to at least have it acknowledging that. So we did restore a lot of it to what it looked like originally. For example, the ceilings on the first floor in what will be our business science technology area, those had been painted over the years with a binding paint. And so we had thought we wouldn't be able to find the original pattern that was originally on that ceiling. You could sort of see it in some pictures, but not enough that we'd be able to really replicate it. Well, it turns out when they removed the lighting fixtures that had been added over the years, the painters hadn't gotten underneath the lighting fixtures. So there wasn't enough layers of paint to cover that original pattern. So we were able to find that pattern, and they were then able to take enough of what they could find there and restore it on a canvas that's then applied to the ceiling. So it will be very similar to what was originally there in the building, and we would never have even known what it looked like in its entirety if we hadn't found that. There's paintings in what will be the teen wing that's now the children's area. If you get a chance to go in, look up at the ceilings. Again, those paintings had been painted over. People weren't really certain they were there. But the paint had actually restored, had maintained the integrity of those paintings well enough that we were able to go in and the historical painters very meticulously restored them. So there is a lot of really great original details that are brought back to the building.
What's old is new at the Enoch Pratt. That's terrific. Heidi Daniel is the CEO of the Enoch Pratt. She joins me. We're talking books here. Some suggestions that we might have for things that you can give or get given to you. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR, and you can ping us on Facebook where we are streaming our conversation. Heidi, let's start with David in Odenton. He's calling with a suggestion about a book concerning the Civil War. David, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hey there. So I'm reading a book called Gettysburg, and as you can probably imagine, it's about Gettysburg. But it was written by Stephen W. Sears. And I just think it's a really great single-volume history of that battle. So if you have anybody in your family who enjoys reading that about that period of history and considering our proximity to the National Military Park at Gettysburg, I think it would just be an awesome gift.
Yeah, that's a great idea, David.
Good suggestion.
Thank you for that suggestion. And as you say, getting to the Gettysburg battlefield from the Baltimore area, not a very long hike at all. So, Heidi, we'll talk about all sorts of books in all sorts of different genres. Let's start with one from Baltimore's own Laura Lippman.
Yeah.
Her latest novel, it's called Sunburn.
Yeah, so I will say that this, I read this as a beach read this summer. And interestingly, it takes place not far from Rehoboth, which is where I read it. So it's a kind of nice, twisty thriller with a lot of surprises and a couple of characters that are either embroiled in a romance or out to get one another. You're not really certain. There's
sometimes
a definite tension
the
or
thing,
the same thing. Right. There's a definite tension there. The characters were really engrossing and fun. The mystery was there. You're never really sure if you like anyone. And it's, you know, masterfully told. And Laura Lippman does a great job. And of course, we love to promote our local Baltimore writers. So if you like, if you're looking for a gift for someone who really likes the sort of you know, sort of fun mystery twist novel and but really well-written characters, I highly recommend Sunburn.
Yeah, and you know, Laura's one of those writers who has been at this now for a while, and she has really come into her own. I mean, I know one of her books was made into a movie, and she has different kinds of books, different recurring characters, and she's just, you know, the authority and the craft that she has, the skill that she has developed. Particularly, she started as a mystery writer,
right?
And then she has branched out and has done, you know, all sorts of other kinds of writing. But great storyteller. So, and you're right, we should support our local author. So, Sunburn by Laura Lippman. Another one on your list, An American Marriage. This is by a writer named Tayari Jones.
Yeah. So Tayari Jones actually came to the Pratt, and she was chosen by Oprah as an Oprah Book Club choice right before she came to the Pratt. So that was wonderful.
That was convenient.
It was very convenient for us. It's because we have such excellent taste in books. And this book has really stayed on the bestseller list and is one of the books that you'll see on several of the 2018 best book lists. And she does a masterful job of telling the story about a marriage, a married couple who are Black in America. And the husband is, you know, wrongfully arrested, and it's sort of the toll this takes on their marriage. But the characters are really compelling. The points of view are really compelling, and I think it makes you look at and question, you know, race and relationships and the justice system in America. But it's also a good look at intimate relationships and what those systems, the impact those systems have on our relationships. So Very great.
I always love reading books in which an author has such great command of points of view of different characters.
Yes.
Barbara Kingsolver has a book about that, of a family in the Congo, a missionary family in the Congo. And every chapter is told from the perspective of a different person, the father, the mother, the various children. And, you know, she just nails it. I mean, you understand the same story from a very different perspective because you hear it told, you know, through the eyes of these different people who are different ages and have different agendas and stuff. So when an author has command of that, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah, and she definitely does. So you see both points of view in this marriage.
And the Oprah Book Club. Good for
and
her.
And Oprah Book Club. And well-deserved.
Yeah, Tayari Jones, An American Marriage. We have an email from Naomi who says, thanks for the show. The best gift I gave my oldest daughter this year was downloading the Overdrive app.
Yay!
The Overdrive app, so she could listen to endless audiobooks from the library without having to worry about losing discs or scratch discs, etc. So audiobooks on an app. Our wonderful library system, both Baltimore County and Enoch Pratt, is really like having Christmas all year long. Some favorites that we've listened to this year included Counting by Sevens by Holly Sloan, Counting by Sevens, Rain Rain, so that's R-A-I-N, R-E-I-G-N, Rain Rain by Anne Martin, and The Girl Who Drank the Moon by Kelly Barnhill. You like that one too?
Oh, huh? That's a beautiful book. I actually gave that as a gift recently to someone, one of my daughter's friends, for their birthday. It's beautiful, and I would love to listen to it in audio.
Mm-hmm. And Naomi also says, I have a 7-year-old daughter who is on the autism spectrum, and books that include neurodivergent characters always touch me. Do you have any recommendations for children's books that help shine a light on autism or other developmental differences? What about books for these readers themselves that help them to understand the complex world of social clues and abstract processing? So you may have some ideas about, and we can ask Paula Willie that when she comes in the next segment. Books for kids on the autism spectrum.
So I'm trying to think. Nothing is immediately coming to mind for that age range. Maybe Paula will have some good recommendations. We could certainly pull together a book list and post something on our blog later in that subject matter, because I think it's a really important one. I do remember one a few years ago, but now I can't remember. I can see the cover, and it's kind of like our customers come in and
been
say,
there, done that.
Cover, and it's blue. This one's orange, and it has a dog, but I can't remember the exact title. There was another one that just came out recently also that has a the main character has a sister who is deaf, and it's sort of her journey in discovering what she doesn't know about her sister's experiences in life, and it's geared at that age range, and I can't remember
the one,
exactly
one that comes to mind for me is The Curious Incident of the Dog.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Oh,
thank
there you. Go.
There I was like, dog, there's a dog.
Yeah, do I win a prize?
You do. You definitely win a prize.
Good. I can go to the grand prize round. Right. Maybe I'll get a washer
the
dryer.
The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night.
Yeah,
yes,
it's a
that's exactly. Beautiful it is
book.
A beautiful
yeah,
book.
Disturbing. Okay, well, Naomi, thank you for that email. Well, let's take a break, and then we will come back. Heidi Daniel is the CEO of the Enoch Pratt Library. That's the great library system here in Baltimore City. We'll take a break, and when we return, we will be joined by Paula Willie. She is a children's librarian who's down in Highlandtown, part of the Pratt system there. We will talk about some great titles for the little ones on your list. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. You can follow me on Twitter, @TomHallWIPR. And you can catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. Stick around. We will be right back.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR, where you're listening to Midday.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for hanging with us this afternoon. Coming up tomorrow, by the way, a conversation with the directors of after-school programs that combine sports with a focus on academic achievement. We'll talk about programs that have kids playing soccer, hockey, squash, and even riding dirt bikes as a way to focus their attention on the advantages of succeeding in and out of the classroom. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review A Wonder in My Soul. It's a terrific show at Baltimore Center Stage. Linnell and I saw it the other night. We really liked it. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about great books to give as gifts or to give to yourself. Heidi Daniel is the CEO of the Enoch Pratt Library. She's with us here in Studio A. And Paula Willie joins us now. She heads up the Children's Department at the Enoch Pratt's Southeast Anchor Branch in Highlandtown. She also reviews children's books occasionally for the Baltimore Sun. Good to see you.
Nice to see you, Tom.
And happy holidays. So listeners, you are welcome to join our conversation and make your suggestions for books of kids and kids that are no longer kids. kids like me and Heidi and Paula. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And our conversation is being streamed live from Studio A on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Paula, let's go back to the question we had right before the break from Naomi about books for kids on the autism spectrum. Heidi and I came up with Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, but you have a couple of suggestions as well.
Well, there's a couple of things that have come out this year that are specific. There's Temple Grandin, The Girl Who Thought in Pictures. That's a really good picture book. It's got exceptional illustrations. And Temple Grandin, of course, the famously the woman with autism, who found her place kind of designing things that brought compassion to basically the slaughterhouse process. And if you can imagine a picture book that sort of brings that to kids, but it really achieves it. It's a extraordinary picture book this year, kind of for being able to pull in Temple Grandin and the way she thinks, plus... I mean, the fact that we're talking about slaughterhouses for kids.
Yeah, good for her.
But there's also a book by Temple Grandin about realizing your own potential, even when, you know, working within a framework that doesn't necessarily understand your potential. That's another, I can't remember the title of that book, but it's by Temple Grandin, and it's for kids, and that's good.
You Google Temple Grandin and Ian Pratt, and you'll come up with something. So Heidi, we have a question from Joe on Facebook who says, can you recommend any books for folks who love to cook? And there is a cookbook on your list.
Yeah, there was a cookbook on my list, Cravings by Chrissy Teigen, and her newest book is Cravings, Hungry for More. So I feel like when I first checked this out, I was a little like, oh, I felt a little silly. Chrissy Teigen, a cookbook, what could she possibly know about cooking? But
who is Chrissy Teigen?
So Chrissy Teigen is sort of a celebrity. She's a social media celebrity. She's married to John Legend, who's a
And he's also a celebrity?
No, he's a famous singer.
Oh, okay.
And
I'm just clueless.
Yeah.
I'm just clueless.
Okay. No, he's a famous singer.
So John
Legend,
I have heard of him. He's a singer.
Yes.
And Chrissy, is she like
It's his wife.
She's not a singer, though.
No, she's an actress.
She's a Victoria's Secret model,
yeah,
wasn't she?
Yeah, she was a Victoria's Secret model. She has a lot of social media presence, and she was on a show not long ago with LL Cool J where they did lip syncing battles.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's...
And she's written a cookbook.
And she's written a cookbook. So
our director and engineer, Luke Spicknall, was also a Victoria's Secret model. It didn't work out.
Yeah, so you should write a cookbook.
It did not work out well, so he ended up here, but maybe he'll have a cookbook too. So, well, good for her. Maybe she's a really good cook. So it's called Cravings.
Well, actually, she is. So her first cookbook, I checked it out. I felt a little silly, but I went home, and first of all of her recipes are very attainable. She pulls from her Asian heritage and mixes those flavors in, and she just has some really great recipes. She had a French toast, like cornflake breakfast casserole recipe that I made and like impressed everyone, and it was totally delicious. And I also really like mixing breakfast cereal into desserts, so it was fun to do that in this recipe. And her newest cookbook is a little less fun and a little more healthy than her first one, maybe a little more serious. But she also mixes in great stories of her life growing up, kind of having this dad from Iowa and this mom from Asia and the combining of those cultures and just her celebrity life. And it's fun. The recipes are easy and the food is really good.
Right.
There's a shake and bake chicken with hot honey sauce in her new recipe book that I can't wait to try. So it's also really pretty. It's a really pretty book to look at.
Good. Well, it seems to hit it on all cylinders. And the other one, Joe, that I would recommend to you is John Shields' latest book. It's called The New Chesapeake Kitchen. John is the chef and proprietor at Gertrude's over at the BMA. And he's been on the show many times talking about things food, and this new cookbook talks about sourcing things locally and gives history of the farms and some of the places that the BMA uses for their sources and places that have been longstanding and great. So it's called The New Chesapeake Kitchen, and it's a terrific, terrific book. So Paula Willey, let's talk about some books for the little ones.
Okay.
You got some picture books here. You got a whole cart of them. The folks on Facebook can see this big pile of them that you brought in, which is terrific. But is there is there an It book this year for the youngish set?
Honestly, I wouldn't say there's an It book this year. We're not in a year where Harry Potter is hitting the shelves or even Percy Jackson. But what that does mean is it's a great year for consolidation. So if you don't mind, I'd like to start with a couple of box sets. Box sets are really great to give for Christmas because, for one thing, you know, they wrap up and they're like kind of, it's hefty. You give them, giving somebody a brick.
Yeah.
And we have series that have sort of matured and come into, you know, now you have like 3 books or 4 books that you can put together into a like great looking box set, and it feels like a special gift.
Yeah, and kids like love that. These series. I mean, and authors and publishers like this series too, because clearly if something clicks, they go for it again and again and again. I mean, look at Broadway, for God's sake.
And yeah.
There's a revival of My
and
Fair
parents,
Lady now.
Right.
I mean, it's like
parents
they just keep
too,
coming back.
Parents love them because it's like you know that your child loves that character in that series, and it's great.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
One of the things that really, that we see as a boost for kids reading series is that once they get used to the world, to the characters, et cetera, the barrier for entry is lower. Mm-hmm. So they start that book knowing what's going on. And that gives them that sense of confidence of like, you know, I don't have a whole new, you know, river to cross to get in there.
Yeah.
So that being said, there are some box sets, new box sets for some favorite series. Hunger Games has a new box set. Spy School by Stuart Gibbs has a new box set, and that's great. That's little kids going, learning how to be spies, clearly. Jason Reynolds' Track series has a box set. It follows each member of an inner-city track team and their different lives. Zeta the Space Girl by Ben
I just
Hecke.
Got that book. I just got the one about the track team for a fourth grader in my orbit, and she's loving it.
Yeah. These are all right about that sort of middle grade. You know, Hunger Games may skew a little bit up to middle school. For younger kids, Zeta the Space Girl, which is a graphic novel trilogy by Ben Hecke. Also, Amulet. Which I have here. The 8th book has finally come out.
8 of them?
Oh, my God. Kids who love
it's
Amulet.
It's not a series. Yeah. It's
my
a dynasty, for God's
Amulet,
sake.
My daughter reads Amulet.
Right?
It's very popular in our household. And I like to read it as well. It's, you know, a good...
Yeah. I mean, when you get kids together and you're like, okay, somebody recommend a graphic novel, once somebody says the word Amulet, they all chorus in with like, oh, my God.
So how old is your daughter, Heidi?
My daughter is 8. She's in 3rd grade, and she loves graphic novels. So I'm looking at your box sets, and I'm like, oh, there's a couple on there that...
You have in your house. So, sure. So this is, we're talking about an age range for early readers up through like 10, 11.
Well, these box sets are mostly, I would say, grade 3 and up.
Grade 3, okay.
So not early readers. To the readers that have basically their feet under them. But the nice thing about graphic novels is that since they're heavily illustrated, it supports the text. So you have a check. Like, I'm reading this dialogue, and then I have the picture to back it up to show me that what I've understood is correct. You also have the opportunity for information, sort of a synergistic understanding, because that's the way that grown-ups go through the world.
Yeah, let's go to the phones to Charlotte in Baltimore. Charlotte, you have a suggestion for a graphic novel for grown-ups, huh?
Yes. It's called Rowena Sunder, and it's about a character who moves to New York as a young person in the 60s, and her ventures in the art world. It's illustrated charmingly with lots of local artists' pieces shown in miniature in the gallery she works at. So you might even find one of your friend's works in there.
No fun. This is by Linda Campbell Franklin?
That is correct, yes.
So it's Rowena Sunder, Artist in New York. Okay, well, thanks, Charlotte. That's a great suggestion. I appreciate it. We have a call, Heidi Daniel, from David, who says he's standing in front of the Pratt Library downtown. So, David, welcome. You're our man on the street in front of the Pratt. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. So what's on your mind?
I'm sorry. About 30 years ago, I moved here, and I was able to take a self-directed tour of the library using a Sony Walkman. You would walk through the library and turn it on and off at the direction of the commentator, and he would tell you what you were looking at, wherever it was you stand. You originally walked out of the library. He told you all about the outside of the library, and you walked in and had about a 30-minute tour of the inside of the library. And I was wondering if there was any chance of something like that being brought back up on the new library.
Oh, that's great. So instead of a Sony Walkman where you just get an intervenous injection now, right?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, you just get a chip that you place in your skin. No, we are looking at that, actually. Not a Sony Walkman, but we are interested in how do we do self-guided tours when we reopen. Our goal is to get a million people through those doors in the first year. And of course, we want people to understand all of the history and what they're looking at in the building. So we are, it's an excellent suggestion, and we are in fact looking at doing that. Whether it'll be, you know, an interactive display or some form of audio, we don't know yet, but we're working on it.
That's a great idea. Yeah. And, you know, if you're going to have an architectural wonder, you want
to,
you know,
you
let folks know about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's terrific. So, Paula, are there little kids like funny books? They like books that are really funny. What
I've heard that.
I've heard that. Yeah, I bet you have heard that like daily in your job as a children's librarian. Are there some? There's two or three titles that strike you as just really hysterical.
There's a couple of series like we talked about series that are reliable. There is Bad Kitty. There is Dog Man. I'm very much
Bad Kitty and Dog Man. They're funny.
Bad Kitty's very bad. And Dog Man is the body of a policeman and the head of a dog. Right? Like you do.
There's a laugh riot.
The same author as Captain Underpants.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Now, that was considered hysterical back in the 90s. Yeah. I remember that.
It's hysterical.
And it's still now.
Huh? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then a new one that I very much like, this a graphic novel called Sparks by Ian Boothby and Nina Matsumoto, which is two kitties in a mechanical dog suit fighting an evil alien in the guise of a baby in a diaper.
There you go. I'm following you. I'm totally with you. I got that.
Well, that's the great thing about
kids' books. That just sounds like Tuesday night at my house, basically.
Exactly. That's basically out front of Highland Town most of the time.
So what's the title of that one again?
That one's called Sparks.
Sparks. All right. Very good. The one that the YA novel that I really liked reading, I don't read a whole lot of them, but Heidi, I talked to Kwame Alexander a couple of months ago on Midday, and he's a terrific guy. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a book called Swing, which I just thought was terrific. I mean, I loved it.
Yeah, it was. So if I'm remembering correctly, Swing is a book where the main protagonist is a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And is it written in verse?
It's a young kid. Yes,
yeah.
It is written
in verse.
And he's a kid. He's like in the ninth grade or something.
Yeah, and he's in ninth grade. And so I read this book earlier this year and really thought it was beautifully written and well done. I actually gave it to my fourth grader, who's a reluctant reader, but thought he would have some interest in it. And he did. And we talked about it and read it together. And Kwame Alexander is just, he's masterful, and his young adult books are so engaging and relatable, and he's a great voice for young adult fiction.
Yeah, he really is. Let's go to Peter on the phone from Baltimore. Peter, welcome to Midday with Heidi Daniel and Paula Willey.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I just want to describe something that, on a lark, I started doing. I call it a multi-library experience, and it's similar to the graphic novels, but it's actually reading a book. I recently took down from my shelf H is for Hawk. The time was right for that book for me. And then began simultaneously listening to it, the audio version, which was available via Hoopla from my library account. And it's just a very unique reading experience that could be used by kids of all ages.
So you had the book in front of you, and you were following along as the audio book, as you listened to the audio book.
Exactly, as read by the author, Helen McDonald.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Cool.
I love that idea. It's like being read aloud to, kind of, which is, we all love, I think.
Sure. And Paula, when kids come into the Anchor, the Southeast Anchor branch down in Highland Town, I mean, do you encourage kids to listen to audiobooks? I mean, is that a controversial thing in the library business?
Oh, no. Audio is, I am a huge proponent of audio. Audio improves vocabulary, pronunciation, obviously. It's a great thing for diverse voices. Mm-hmm. Hearing yourself, you know, in your ear. I love promoting Hoopla. And
What is Hoopla?
Hoopla is one of our e-audio sources or e-book sources. So ebooks to read, e-audio to listen to. I personally use it because I'm learning Spanish. I'm working in Highlandtown.
Yeah, good for you.
Necesito hablo español. And it's been helping me a lot with, and you get
so
to.
So Hoopla is an app?
It's an app similar to Overdrive. So you can download it on your phone and you create an account with your library card. And then you can stream audio, ebooks, and there's also movies and music. The great thing about Hoopla
and by the way, I'm assuming
book,
all of that
person.
Is free.
Yes,
you can
of
free.
Course.
It's like taking a book out of the library, except you're exactly taking it out on your phone.
Right, and Hoopla doesn't have wait lists, so it's one book, one person. You know, it's on demand as you check it out. It's there for you, as opposed to Overdrive, which is a more traditional model. Overdrive has a larger collection, but you will often encounter wait lists. So if you're in a hurry, you need something immediately, you can either filter through the Libby Overdrive app to what's available now, or you can go to Hoopla and whatever's there is available now.
So Hoopla and Overdrive, you can just download them on your phone, your iPad,
your
whatever.
And the Overdrive app is actually listed as Libby when you go in. They call it Libby.
All right. Well, we'll have links to those when we come back. We will talk more about books for your holiday giving or for your holiday reading with Heidi Daniel. She's the CEO of the Enoch Pratt Library. Paula Willey heads up the Children's Department at the Pratt's Southeast Anchor Branch in Highlandtown. Quick break, and then we will have more suggestions for great books. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Good afternoon and welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. So what was your favorite book when you were a kid? Do you have memories of tearing the wrapping paper off the book that you most wanted for Hanukkah or Christmas or Kwanzaa and reading it over and over, maybe taking it to bed and reading under the covers? Give us a call. Send us a tweet. Send us an email. Let us know what books you really enjoyed this year and which books you enjoyed when you were a kid. And if you're a kid, why aren't you in school? Just asking. And but we want to find out what you guys are all reading. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. We're talking books today with Heidi Daniel. She's the CEO of the Enoch Pratt Library, and Paula Willey, who is the children's librarian at the Southeast Anchor Branch in Highlandtown. That's on the east side of Baltimore. So let's talk a little bit about nonfiction. There are some nonfiction titles, Paula, for kids as well.
Well, when you talk about, what was your favorite book as a kid, every now and then you get this person or you see this kid whose favorite book when they were a kid was the encyclopedia. Like they're laying on the floor, paging through and reading about who knows what. Of course, nowadays that'd be like the kid who skips around Wikipedia.
Yeah, right.
But there are some gorgeous, oversized nonfiction books that really convey that whole kind of stuff. I would pick Atlas Obscura's The World's Most Adventurous Kid. I actually pulled that one for my 15-year-old, even though it's basically aimed at younger kids, Atlas Obscura being that website that pulls up crazy places all over the world and tells you about them. There's a book.
So, like Chrissy Teigen, I've never heard of Atlas Obscura, but so I should know about
that.
Yeah.
There's some neat stuff. You can put in your zip code and it will tell you all the weird places that are closest to you. So for us, it's the old Maryland Asylum. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, maybe just me.
That sounds fun. If I put in our zip code, it'll just give me Luke's house.
Oh.
When it comes to weird places.
Dude.
But that's all right.
So there's also we have a big emphasis at the Pratt on making and coding. Computer Education Week just finished. So there are these great books from No Starch Press. The one that I am highlighting today, I guess, is Mission Python, Code a Space Adventure Game. So this book walks you through creating a game, coding a game in Python on the computer. And when you're finished, you have a game that other kids can play. Similar to that, Lego Boost is the new version of Lego that incorporates robotics, but there's no manual for it. So there's a manual, there's a book called the Lego Boost Activity Book that in the same way, it takes the Lego stuff and does really good visual instructions on how to build a robot. And at the end, you have a robot. And the skills that you get from both of those books, you're going to be able to then move on and make, you know, customize your own stuff.
Good. And our director and engineer, Luke Spicknall, is asking if there's a talk show host robot chapter so he can build one of those because he's looking for a new one. So, Heidi, when it comes to nonfiction, I mean, most, I would say 90%, 95% of the book authors I talk to have written nonfiction books because we're talking about whatever, you know, important issues that they're writing about. So I read a whole lot of nonfiction, and which is why I crave novels. I'm just finishing tonight. I can't wait. I'm going to finish Nicole Krause's latest novel called Forest Dark, which I just love. She's such a great
on my list.
History of love she wrote, and she's a terrific writer. But anyway, you know, to pick just one or two great nonfiction titles these days is tough.
And, you know, I have to say, I am not a nonfiction reader. I'm a novel reader. But this year I have read a ton of nonfiction because there's just been some really great choices. So we have Dear America, Notes from an Undocumented Citizen by Jose Antonio Vargas. And he is coming to the Pratt on January 23rd at Church of the Redeemer. He is probably he considers himself one of the most famous undocumented citizens. So he's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, written for several noted publications. And he came to this country when he was, I think, about 12 from the Philippines and did not know until he was a little bit older that he was here as an undocumented citizen. And it tells his journey, being gainfully employed, having an amazing career, you know, and then deciding to kind of come out as an undocumented citizen and talk about what that means and his path or lack of path to citizenship. And it's such a timely conversation. And he is an amazingly good writer. It's so easy to read. I think I finished it in like 3 days. And I wanted to like call him up and ask him a bunch of questions, you know, and it's in which you'll have a chance to do if you come see him. So I highly recommend that. The Library Book by Susan Orlean is another one.
Yeah, I've heard great things about both of these books, actually.
Right. Yeah. So The Library Book was another one where I probably finished it in a week. And I don't have a lot of time to read. It's just these are books that you pick them up and they're absorbing and you can't stop reading them. And she investigates the fire. The LA Public Library fire in 1986 and sort of looks at, you know, the circumstances surrounding that. So there's a little bit of mystery there. She looks at the behind the scenes work of public libraries in today's urban environment and what it means for a public library to exist in America today. And for me, obviously, that was profound.
A little buswoman's holiday for you, as they say.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And I love to see people, you know, cheering the behind the scenes. And then the last one I just have to talk about besides Becoming, which I just will mention because I think everyone's reading it or should.
Have you read it?
No.
I haven't read it.
I'm on the wait list at the Pratt.
Yeah, right. I don't want to put you on the spot. I haven't read it either because, you know, Mrs. Obama is not quite doing media that includes WYPR.
She's
she's doing stadiums. If we had a stadium, she would do it.
It's incredible. And I mean, it's definitely on my list. I'm on the wait list. Maybe someone will give it to me for Christmas. Hint, hint. But the other book that I read this year is a nonfiction book that I couldn't stop raving about was I'll Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara. Yeah. And it's the story of the rapist turned serial killer in California in the 70s and 80s. And she died tragically while finishing this book. And I got this book and I was like, I am going to read this and I'm not going to be able to fall asleep at night. So if it doesn't grab me right away, I'm going to put it down. And it did keep me awake at night, but was so engrossing. Mm-hmm. The story, the clues, the crime. I don't read a lot of true crime. And this, I really couldn't stop reading it.
Got a couple of other suggestions for nonfiction from Adam B., who sends us an email. He says, I've been in Baltimore for 6+ years now, and recently I bought a home, so I've been diving headfirst into the history of Baltimore. One that he recommends is a book that we did talk about here on Midday called Baltimore, A Political History by Matthew Crenson. Mm-hmm. Matt is a great historian, and this is a very, very complete book. I mean, from day one of this founding of Baltimore up through, you know, just the very recent mayoral administration. The other one he wants to talk about is Images of America, Baltimore's Patterson Park by Tim Almaguer. It's basically a picture book of Patterson Park throughout history, and some pictures are simply captioned and some come with stories. So it's a book that you can read from start to finish or just flip through casually. It's great to leave on your coffee table for guests to enjoy. So, Adam, we appreciate that. Nancy Lord Lewin says, hi, Tom, and hi, guests. I love this YA series, The Changers, written by my college classmate, T. Cooper, and his wife, Allison Glock Cooper. It's for grades 6 and up, builds empathy, and has given me a ton of valuable insights into diverse identities and experiences, and they are beautifully crafted stories. So thanks for that YA series. So, Paula, speaking about series and books for the little ones, there's a whole fantasy genre for kids, for little kids. I guess there's a fantasy genre for big kids, too. But what strikes you as some highlights in that genre?
Well, the cool thing about fantasy this year for kids is the amount of diversity that we're seeing in it. So you have this crazy first in a series called Dactyl Hill Squad by Daniel Jose Older that takes place in New York in 1863, and there are dinosaurs. And the kids who have gotten, who have sort of escaped from Manhattan and moved to Brooklyn where to be safe, have come from the Manhattan Colored Orphans Asylum.
That's what all the hipsters in Brooklyn have done now. They're fleeing Manhattan and they're living in Brooklyn.
There's so
try renting an apartment, you know. Forget it.
Actually, Brooklyn is more expensive now than anywhere else.
It is.
You know, everything about this book from start to finish is just fantastic. Even the end papers have this map that is wonderful. And then I want to recommend The Unicorn Rescue Society by Adam Gidwitz, hometown boy. He's got the Unicorn Rescue Society is a bunch of people all over the world who are committed to the protection of beasts, legendary beasts that are not actually legendary. There really are Sasquatches. There really are dragons. They haven't yet found a unicorn, but they have high expectations. And then there's a great book called Dragons in a Bag, which combines fantasy, because there's dragons, and a fully urban setting. This is by Zeta Elliott, and it's hitting a lot of the best of lists for this year. So the Jackson has to get baby dragons to a magical realm, but it has a little bit of an echo of...
But since they're in the city, they can take the subway.
Right?
That's an interesting writerly choice, isn't it, to put dragons in cities?
Yeah.
I mean, you think of dragons as being kind of more rural.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Eating lots of space.
Yeah, lots of space, lots of vegetation around. So I want to talk, Heidi, about this wonderful author I've heard so much about. Her name is Nick Stone, Nick,
yes.
N-I-C. She's actually at the Pratt here at one of the branches tonight, and we'll talk about the details of that in a minute. But the book that you've chosen as the One Book Baltimore selection is called Dear Martin.
Yeah, so this book was selected by the One Book Baltimore Committee, which was made up of a public school and library and community members. And it was being read by all 7th and 8th graders. And Nick Stone herself as an author is really worth looking up and following. She's so engaging, and the kids all were squealing when they saw her, and she's like a little rock star. But the book is Dear Martin. That's the One Book Baltimore book, and it's about Justice McAllister, who's, an honor student at a prep school, great kid, African-American, gets handcuffed by a police officer even though he's not doing anything wrong, and this incident sort of changes him, and he is dealing with, our modern society and racism and his place in it through writing letters to, Martin Luther King. So he's sort of... looking at Dr. King's legacy and what it means for him and what it means today. And it's an important book with an important storyline that I think it's great that our 7th and 8th graders are reading.
Terrific.
And hopefully their families are talking about it. And she also has another one called Odd One Out, which is her newest book. And it has a trio of friends sort of in a love triangle and very diverse and fun.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have. I appreciate both of you guys coming in. Thank you so much. Happy holidays. And we'll check in with you again soon. Appreciate
it.
So, I'm sorry we didn't get to Susie's call. She recommends The Magic Pin by Ina Forbus. It's an out-of-print treasure from her childhood. Heidi Daniel is the CEO of the Enoch Pratt Library, and you can find Paula Willie most days in the Children's Department at the Southeast Anchor Branch in Highlandtown. There's always a lot going on at the Central Library and all the branches. Tonight at the Northwood Branch on Lock Raven Boulevard, that's where Nick Stone's going to be. She's the one who wrote Dear Martin, which is the One Book Baltimore selection. She's going to be speaking with Rashad Staten, who is the Youth Engagement Specialist at the Baltimore City Schools. It starts at 6 o'clock. Come to our website, WIPR.com. npr.org/midday, and we'll have a list of the books that we talked about and some information about that event. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk about youth programs that use sports to help kids get better at school. We want to thank the Baltimore Chef Shop for lunch today. They are on the Avenue in Hamden. They offer a variety of private events and cooking classes for kids and adults, including baking and international cuisines. Tomorrow night at 6:30, they're offering a pizza, calzone, and stromboli class. You can get gift certificates to the Baltimore Chef Shop online at baltimorechefshop.com. I'm Tom Hall. On behalf of the entire Midday team, happy reading. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.